this is it. I think I'm dying. I thought I was having a heart attack or a stroke. So I wanted to say I love you. Goodbye.
Don't get a red box in
like,
the attic.
Hi, hello. And I'm like,
She's with
our mates gone. Listen to this.
Yeah.
Like, it's 11 o'clock in the morning and you're drunk already. Which is code for I love you. Thank you for our children. See you on the other side.
It's another episode of You Must Be Joking with the Laughter Lounge and Joe.ie.
And who have we got in this week, Eric?
Another one of our best pals. Another lad.
Who is he?
Yeah. Who is he actually? No. He's the one, the only, the myth, the legend, that is Dermot Whelan. Dermot Whelan, thank you for coming to our podcast.
Eric, Willa, you've locked the doors. I'd no choice. But thanks. But you slid a water dish under the door. That helps.
We heard you mention that you miss radio, so we just kind of try to get you behind the mic.
My ego thanks you. Microphones.
And come here. How has, I suppose, the transition been from being, you know, the voice?
I haven't transitioned there, you know. Oh,
no,
that.
I know. Oh, well, it's in the post.
I was thinking of that on the way over because I'm sorry for the way I'm dressed. I'm wearing shorts and I had a scarf on.
So you were
very Irish. And I was thinking, I wonder, I actually, that's what it is. I think the Irish summer identifies as winter.
Right.
That's how we have to treat it now.
Yeah, it's
the Irish weather is trans and it identifies as summer, identifies as winter.
Oh, I think, sorry, Eric, I think you come out of the house dressed the way most people do at the beginning of June and kind of May is that
optimism.
If things go wrong, you have the scarf. But if things, you know, go right, you have the shorts. Like, it's like the Youngfellas from all the council estates. You see them going around the winter. And they're dressed for the North Pole up the top, but they're dressed for the Bahamas down the bottom.
Yeah.
Around with the shorts on and a big North Face or a Canada Goose jacket.
Have you noticed, though, the incredible skill and speed at which the Irish public can switch into summer gear?
Oh, yeah.
Like, this, it could be lashing rain, 7 degrees Celsius, and then the sun comes out and it just pushes 13 or 14, and the same people who are wearing black North Face puffers 10 minutes beforehand are now suddenly in flip-flops and Bermuda shorts.
And on the flip side of that, I've noticed as well, and I don't know whether it's a hard man thing in Dublin, but when it is really warm, I still see lads with the Canada Goose jackets and the North Face jackets with the hoods up and a hat on.
Yeah.
And it's like rebellion. Yeah, fuck the system, fuck the weather. I'm dressed for winter. Sweating bullets.
They're drug dealers.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
That's why they've got the hoods up, keeping a low profile.
I know when summer is happening in my house because two things happen. First thing happens is we put on the summer duvet. So we have a winter and a summer duvet,
Okay.
So we drop the tog. The tog goes down a few, which is great, like, and then you get that shout, go up into the attic and get me summer clothes. That's what we miss, because she packs all her summer clothes away, say, October, puts them into the attic, and then brings them back down in May or June.
That's organised. Has she got those tubs, those IKEA tubs with the snap-on lids?
No, we're not that posh now.
You know those
the Tesco
people.
Bags.
I do, yeah. Like, so organised.
My bikini, it's up there beside the ski gear, the camping gear, beside the Christmas tree.
In section 4B. Sorry, what?
Well, come here, let's be...
Hey, Google, throw down my summer gear, please.
Alexis.
We're getting laser and laser
come here,
species, aren't
Alexis
we?
Doesn't understand me. I swear to God. Alexis. My mate has an Alexis. Well, Alexis, Alexis. That's why he doesn't understand me.
You're calling by the wrong name.
I'd be saying stuff to her and it just be just doing a completely different thing. Like,
she's giving you the cold shoulder. That's what you need to go. I'm not answering him.
I'm getting spoke to by a scumbag. Like, play The House of the Rising Sun and then something else will come on. Do you know what I mean?
I think it knows. Some days it's just in a bad mood and just goes, I'm going to put on something completely unrelated to what you just asked.
Yeah.
It's like, please play The Joshua Tree by U2. Playing Frank Zappa's Greatest Hits. That doesn't sound anything like it. You're just annoying me now.
Yeah, yeah.
Dermot, as Willie alluded to, and we both alluded to, you have changed careers recently. You still are. You are a national treasure. I will say that to you, Dermot. I would not even lie. I wouldn't even throw that if I didn't believe it, and I believe it. You're a national treasure.
Isn't that what you say when somebody is dying or dead? They're a national treasure.
Yeah. I suppose they do. Before we leave this part of the podcast, your partnership with Dave Moore was iconic, right? It was started out in Dublin's 98, and then you went national, and then the whole country got to see what everyone in Dublin was raving about for so long, and the chemistry is half together, the crack. Like, I used to listen to your show going, them lads, what a bleeding job.
The toll trolls.
Great. Just great crack. And going, those lads are getting paid good money to be talking to each other, to have the crack with each other. Like, would I be right in saying that? I know. Great, don't get me wrong. I'm not naive to think that there was no work done. Of course, there was a lot of work and research done. And he's had a good time around.
By other people.
By other people, right.
Yeah. Look, it was 21 years of just the crack. Not unlike what you guys are doing right now, you know. In fact, the tables were, you know, are a bit reversed here.
True.
Because, you know, both of you guys were in our studio many times over the years, talking about all the wonderful things that you've done. It is. I mean, you're obviously, you know, the way I saw it was that, yes, it was fun. It was super fun. And you were enjoying life with your best pal and all the gags. And a lot of the time, the funniest things were happening when the music was playing. And, you know, you were just acting the Egypt in there just to entertain each other. But you played a heightened version of yourself, you know. So, and that took an awful lot of energy. And I don't think I really appreciated just how much energy that kind of takes from your own battery until I went back in quite recently and joined Dave on his show as a guest.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, which was really cool. We both thought it was going to be super weird, but it actually wasn't, which was a lovely sign that both of us were happy in our new roles.
And moved on, yeah.
Yeah, but I was talking to him for about 20 minutes on the air, and the thing that struck me afterwards was how exhausted I was. I was like, wow, I'd forgotten that elevated energy that you have every day.
Yeah.
And I used to wonder, like, why was I almost falling asleep at the wheel some days driving home and thinking, what's wrong with me? Jeez, I feel like an owl fella. And you can kind of take that energy burn for granted, you know. But, you know, that was just an observation, I guess, kind of looking in from the outside now. But I absolutely loved it. I loved, you know, people, I get asked a lot, what do you miss most about, you know, being on the radio? Because it was such a long time, as I say, 21 years. You know, I miss Dave. I miss seeing him every day. I miss the crack with the team, you know, Cathal and Emer and Maria, because, you know, and all the personalities, you know from working here.
Yeah.
People make a job.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the job is nice if it's challenging and a little bit fun, but it's the people. Because once you walk through the door, you don't see work first, you see people, you know, and if they're on your wavelength and they're rooting for you, then it's a job worth keeping, you know. And that's, I guess, what made it so hard for me to leave for so long was because, and made the decision such a big one for me, because, you know, it's hard to leave a job that you love.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to go, I hate my bosses, this job sucks, the hours suck, you know, I'm gone. But it's the ones where you go, I love the people I work with, I love the job, I loved my listeners. Yeah. You know, you've given up on all of these relationships, or certainly changing those relationships quite a lot.
Did you feel a kind of a personal pressure, is that the word, I don't know, because of Dave, who is, like, you know, one of your best pals, and you are basically telling him, this partnership we've had for so long, I'm breaking her up now. It was obviously you've had chats with Dave and he knew this was coming. It wasn't like, what? You're going? It wasn't like that. Like, you know, how did that conversation, was it an ongoing thing over the period of time?
With my rucksack on my back as I waved him from the elevator. Huh?
Sayonara, Dave.
I won't be in tomorrow. Or the next day.
You can sit where you want.
Yeah, with my safari hat on and my rifle. Yeah, obviously that was the big one, you know, because you're leaving. I spoke about this on my own podcast. I had him on as a guest and we kind of explored this whole topic. And I guess what's lovely about that is it's the kind of a conversation that two blokes don't tend to have, and definitely don't tend to have in public, where you kind of look at your own relationship and go, how has this changed and how will it be different? And so, you know, I came to the conclusion that it was almost as if our relationship was flipped into a negative.
Okay.
Because we saw each other every day in work and we rarely saw each other outside of work. And that's what worked for us. And so now I never see him in work. So we have to make the effort to see each other outside of work, which can be a bit weird.
Yeah.
Because we're making dinner arrangements and going, you know, hello, how are you? how are the children? And that's just a relationship we never had, you know?
Yeah.
And now within a couple of seconds, obviously, and that was just the early days, it was a bit different. But, you know, it's you have to recognize that the relationship is changed and there may be a little bit more work. But in a lot of ways, it was like ending a marriage, you know, and saying, you know, maybe we should consciously uncouple, you know, do a Gwyneth on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, still be friends, but not be in each other's pockets.
Not in a sexual way.
but, you know, not have that close contact like we used to have, you know. Yeah. And that's okay because things evolve. But I'm so happy for him. I just saw him on the side of a bus as I was walking in here, you know, and the first time I saw that, my stomach did a little bit of a yeah.
All right.
Was he not getting sponsored with BMW anymore?
Sponsored by Dublin Buses.
He's an ambassador for Leyland Buses now. He'll take anything.
Look, obviously, you've touched on it there, the exhaustion, the focus, the energy that is required to do what you did for every day, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. And that's just in the studio. There's a bit of pre-work, there's a bit of post-work as well, and comedy. So there obviously came a point where you felt like you needed a little bit of help. We were breaking up or whatever. What was happening?
Yeah, well, that was a panic attack that I had driving to perform at the Cat Laughs Comedy Festival.
We were with you that year. I remember meeting you after.
Well, maybe that's why you had the panic attack.
Hey!
But you know, you remember starting out in comedy, and particularly the Cat Laughs, because all of us pretty much started at the same time.
That's right.
And we were all getting the nod for the kind of the newbies section at the Cat Laughs.
Yeah.
That was such a big deal because our heroes were performing at that festival. Like,
and we were performing with them.
Yeah. And I guess what's really unique about stand-up comedy for any of your listeners is that it's very, I wouldn't say easy, but it's very possible to be starting out as a freshman in stand-up comedy and suddenly find yourself sharing the bill with one of your heroes. It's like you're playing five-a-side with your mates and then suddenly, you know, you're standing...
You're walking up the tunnel with Ronaldo. Yeah.
And it is, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's what's kind of strange about it. So if you have any, you know, propensity for anxiety or imposter syndrome, that is going to be ramped the hell up. You know, and that's what was happening to me when I was driving down to Kilkenny. I was very used to beating myself up in my head. I was clearly sleep deprived.
Yeah.
I had very little in the tank. I remember I'd spent the previous day drinking white wine at a work do, which is, as I like to call it, argument juice. Darling, should we have some argument juice this evening? Yes, perfectly. We've had a great day.
Let's ruin it. Let's ruin the amazing day we've had by getting two bottles of wine.
I'm not talking to each other for a week.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was hungover and I was just driving down. And I guess, you know, for me, since then I've learned, I know a lot more about my nervous system. I know how it works. I know the signals it gives to me. I know the way and the thought patterns, you know, that the way my brain works and the kind of thought patterns, you know, that can develop in there. And, you know, for me at that time, I had none of that self-awareness. So my nervous system was giving me little signals for a long time. But that day, because of the perfect storm, you know, of nervousness, pressure, lack of sleep, hungover, self-doubt, anxiety.
Imposter syndrome. Yeah.
And so my nervous system, went, you know what? He hasn't been listening to us at all. So we're going to ramp this up, you know? Yeah. And the numbskulls in the back room pull the lever down, you know. And next thing I knew, I was, you know, feeling like I couldn't breathe and I had to pull the car over. I liken it to, I don't know if any of you guys have ever suffered a panic attack in your day.
I have.
But for any of your listeners who haven't, it felt like pressure, just increasing pressure on my belly and my chest. And I liken it to, imagine if somebody just came in and sat on top of you, but not in a good way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like there's that pressure there and you're going, God, that feels a bit strange. And you know, the laugh of it is, I didn't at any point think, Was it drinking all day yesterday? Was it the lack of sleep? Was it the self-doubt? Was it the I was smoking a Marlboro Light at the time, you know, and I remember going, what the hell is wrong with me? And I picked up a bottle of fizzy lemonade that I was drinking, organic pink lemonade at the time.
You?
And I began to scan the ingredients suspiciously going, aha, raw cane sugar. I knew it. This is why I'm having a complete nervous meltdown. You know, so anyway, I had to pull the car over and I was rolling around on the driveway of a Pebble Dash bungalow and an ambulance was called and then
Jesus, that bad, damn it.
Yeah, I thought I was dying and my brother-in-law was with me. And because if you're, because it's kind of like a circular self-fulfilling thing, you're going, what the hell is wrong with me? I can't breathe. And the more you panic, the worse it gets. And you're... your muscles can go into spasm because your carbon dioxide and oxygen levels are so skewy. There's not enough oxygen going to your muscles. So you start to go, but my jaw locked up and my tongue locked up and my hands went into like T-Rex mode. Like this. So I was like,
and Christy Brown.
We're not going, Jesus Christ. You're not there waiting off the radio's office. Tits in the garden. Yeah.
But you know what? I tried to ring Karina, my wife, say, this is it. I think I'm dying. I thought I was having a heart attack or a stroke. So I wanted to say, I love you. Goodbye.
Don't get a red box in the attic.
Hi, hello. And I'm like,
She's switching from O2.
She's with our mates gone. Listen to this.
Yeah.
Like, it's 11 o'clock in the morning and you're drunk already. Which is code for I love you. Thank you for our children. See you on the other side. Yeah. So anyway, that's why I ended up breathing into a brown paper bag in the back of an ambulance.
I didn't know it was that serious there.
They brought me to hospital. They hooked me all up. I remember them saying, you've had an anxiety or a panic attack. And I was like, what? Like, I had never dreamed that I had something called anxiety or experienced it. I just thought everybody was sort of running on adrenaline. I thought it was part of my gig. That's what I'd signed up for. And, you know, sometimes you went a bit gaga as a result of it. That was just part of the equation. And I remember eventually they said, do you have a stressful job? And I was like, I'm a stand-up comedian. And they all blessed themselves.
No, we said, do you have a stressful job?
So I remember,
you're a priest.
Yeah, but no part of me went, I think I'm in trouble here, or I really need to reassess my life. I remember going, so I'm good to go, I'm not going to have a heart attack. And they were like, no. So I remember pulling off the little sticky monitor things and I went in and I did three stand-up gigs that night.
Jeez.
And I used the panic attack for material. And I still remember the audience's faces as I went, I was coming down here and I had a panic attack. I ended up in an ambulance, thinking, isn't that hilarious? And I remember people were like, oh my God.
Poor man.
Are you okay?
You need
help. Yeah, you shouldn't be here.
Which is not the reaction you want from the crowd. But I was oblivious. But I remember saying it to other comedians that night and saying, I had something called a panic attack and I was in an ambulance. And they were like, oh yeah, I have them all the time. Why is no one ever talking about this?
That's how we got here as well. Yeah.
I was in the front with the driver.
Do you remember the time we were in the golf competition out in Port Marnie?
Jesus, yeah.
Tell us.
This is the... I'd so love we to say in... no animals were harmed in the making of this story, but there actually were.
Oh, God.
What happened? Tell us.
So Dame invited me to... it was a golf classic, wasn't it?
Yeah, in Port Marnock Links.
And we doing really well, didn't we? We played good golf.
You repaired together.
Did we come toward a second, Dame?
We were definitely in the prizes and we won reasonably good prizes, but we had a slow start, but we found our groove. It was a four ball and we came in. I know my mate Duncan was with us. I can't remember who the fourth was.
No, we did the boy.
Yeah. But anyway.
He obviously wasn't that important.
We had a good score. So we were then full of beans walking in off the course, and I'll let you finish the rest of it.
So we were coming... We'd come off the 18th and it was the usual formality.
I don't think listening will as always.
Shaking hands and all that. Like, come here, this is one of these stories that realistically, if you were on your own, people would say that it didn't happen.
Mm.
But there was three lads there with us. So we come in off the 18th and as we're walking in towards, there's like a chipping green. And I says to Dermot, do you want to go nearest to the flag for €2? Do you know what I mean? And Dermot goes, yeah, no bother. So I chipped my ball in onto the green and there was crows around the green. So Dermot puts his ball down then and he chips his ball. Ball goes up and lands straight on the crow's head. So the crow is going like this, right on the green, right, and all the other crows are
attack.
All the other crows are going, look at Tony. And your man's like this, right? And we're going, so
the poor fella was dazed and sort of stumbling around and
didn't know where it was. I was laughing, right? Damn, it was going, oh Jesus Christ, the crow. And some man come in behind us off the 18 and go, don't worry, lads, I'll sort this out. Damn was thinking, oh, thank God, he must be a vet or something like that. And man picked the crow up and just wrung its neck and just threw it into a bush. We were standing there and we went, what the hell happened?
He didn't just wring his neck. He pulled his head off.
Ah, Lord. Oh, my God.
We apologize for anyone who's sensitive to animal cruelty. Yes, like, we're sensitive to animal cruelty. This guy, but it was a reassuring way he said it. Lads, don't worry. I got this. I'll look after him. Oh, thank God.
He put into a box and brought to a vet.
Yeah, because I felt guilty. The poor creature was upset, obviously, in distress. So he walks over, picks him up and pulls his head off.
Oh, my God. Wipes his hands with his towel on his back. And I went, best boardie of the day.
Oh, my God. And we were like, what the? And we went, what? Oh, I remember you said, what did you do that for? And he goes, the magpies would have had his eyes out. And I was thinking, I'd say he would have preferred to take his chances with the magpies. You just pulled his head out.
Because he was stunned. He got a bang in the head.
One for sorrow.
Imagine. Yeah.
Oh, stop. You couldn't write it.
Oh, wow. So if you've been affected by this podcast,
ring up Crows Anonymous.
Yeah, and if you do have a sick pet, do not bring it to this man if he is a vet. Yeah, so what's wrong with Rex? Oh, he scratched his paw on a bit of gravel.
I'll fix that.
Rah!
Now you can stick him on a headboard.
No, but come here, you do. Like, over the years, myself, yourself, Eric, have always remained in contact. I know we don't see each other as much as we'd like to, but there's always that connection. We always have a laugh. Anytime I ring you up on the phone, we're on the phone for 20 minutes, half an hour. Do you know what I mean?
Damn, it's gone. You're just talking to yourself.
Oh, believe you. You're very funny. Yeah, you can use that one yourself.
That's yourself.
David's all painting the fence with the phone and the loudspeaker. Karina. Twilla. Yeah, damn it. That was like
the dog is running around with the phone in its mouth.
Yeah, it's Ronnie round the clock.
Ronnie round the clock.
That's brilliant. That's the highlight of my day so far. Willie said you never had a panic attack. I've had panic attacks. I went through, like, during COVID. I don't mind people. I've said this before, but I had a bit of a breakdown.
But you were in the AA, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah. I was stuck on the M50. And I was called.
Two yellow vans.
All the lights are on, and I rang AA.
And smoke coming out of my exhaust.
I said, I think I've had a breakdown. He said, ring Dermot Whelan. So,
run a bit of music and he'll start telling you what's going on, the ads.
Are you broken down inside of my
No, come here. I know we're kind of having a bit of lightness about it, but I do remember you having that. And I remember speaking to you about it as well.
It was the lowest I've felt in my life. And it was mainly because, I suppose, everything that I was used to doing was gone because of the pandemic. And I was like, oh my God. And, you know, at the start, nobody knew when the end was. So we're like, in my head, I was going, wow, this is it. This is it forever now. I was delivering Thai food and all that kind of stuff, which actually helped me, by the way. But before that, I went into a really dark place.
Sorry, Eric, that sounded funny. You're delivering Thai food. I'm thinking of plastic chips. Rubber pork chops.
Plastic fried eggs.
Did you?
Yeah. The little kitchen.
Turkey drumsticks that squeak.
Yeah. Toy. Sorry. I was delivering toy food. Imagine people ordering toy food and I just dropping them into. There you go. What the fuck is this? You asked for toy food, didn't you? Yeah.
Sorry.
Far be it for me to get sensitive.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the worst time in your life. This is how blokes deal with things.
This is it, yeah. Back to the lowest point of your life, Eric. Yeah, plastic field. So I was in a very, very dark place. And I didn't know what to do. But I was very aware, Dermot, that you were involved. You were involved in mindfulness. But I knew you were getting into that whole sphere. And I always remember, I exchanged a few texts with you, and you left me a few brilliant messages. And I think what you did for me was you normalized it for me. You didn't say, look, you're not alone here. That was very comforting for me. And you had SoundCloud site, and you had your meditations on that. And I swear to God, damn it, like for months during that pandemic, after I went through the ringer, every morning I would listen to your meditations, and they helped me so much. Like, genuinely, I'm not just saying that because you're a mate and you're sat opposite me there, but they helped me through, I would say, probably the darkest time of my life. And, you know, I always found you as a reassuring person, one of the good guys on the scene. Dermot's always been one of them people. 100%. And also somebody that I could trust. You know, I felt comfortable opening up to you and saying stuff to you, and you came back with just really helpful stuff. But the meditations, Jesus Christ. Now, come here. It hasn't been plain sailing. I did get into a routine where I was meditating all the time, and it was fucking great. But I fell out of the routine, and I'm a little bit annoyed at myself. Every so often, I'll dip in and out of it again, and I go to yours again, like, you know. But I had another episode. I was talking to you about this mainly the last few months. And it wasn't good. And basically, I'm now on antidepressants, and they've helped. I don't get as many panic attacks as I used to. I feel happier in myself. I wouldn't say they make you feel hey woohoo,
yeah,
but they stop you feeling shit,
yeah,
which is great. And it's just getting into the routine of taking them. And obviously, I consulted with another pal of ours who's been through the mill, PJ Gallagher.
Yeah.
He's been to hell and back. And PJ told me, you know, look,
that's on Saturday.
Oh, it is, yeah. It is actually in Bray.
Hell and back. Yeah. So everybody have a psychiatric unit up the front row. Are you ready for this? We're going to hell and back again.
But he broke the stigma of taking antidepressants, and he said, look, Eric, he says, if you've got a sore leg, if you've got a sore head, you take a tablet.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing. If you've got sore mental health and other things aren't working for you, what's wrong with taking a tablet every day? He says, I'm going to be on these for the rest of my life, and I'm very, very happy with that.
Yeah.
And I went, okay, right, Jesus, well, and somebody of his stature is saying that.
And you know what, Eric, if you are taking medication in life for no matter what the illness is, whether it's high blood pressure or whether it's, you know, whatever, if that's helping you, you know, deal with something that if you hadn't got the medication that you'd be in turmoil, I'm totally with that. And I think it's great that you can sit there and actually say that, because a lot of people do carry shame and guilt for being on medication. And I mean, I know for me, being in recovery and, you know, being a recovering drug addict, that sometimes those guys would question me and ask me, you know, listen, I'm going in to have an operation or something like that. And they're saying about giving me, you know, medication after, because opiates and stuff like that kind of would trigger a lot of stuff in people that are in recovery.
Because you wouldn't even think, I would never have thought of that, actually. That's interesting, Will.
I call her a free buzz. No, I mean, like opiates and codeine and stuff like that, I personally refrain. If I'd have to be in really, really bad, but I wouldn't take sulfadine, or I wouldn't, because lads have relapsed on stuff like that, honest to God. And I always say to someone that's in recovery that's looking for a little bit of advice around it, not that I'm a medical professional or anything like that, but I always say you've got to know the difference of whether you're taking it for pain or whether you're taking it for pleasure. And if you're taking it for pain and you're in pain, take it.
Yeah.
But if you're taking it for pleasure, you're crossing a completely different line. So I think it's great that you can sit there and say, listen, yeah, I'm on antidepressants. There's nothing to be ashamed of.
No,
like,
no, and I'm not.
Nothing at all whatsoever. Yeah, I mean, and I mean, I know from being your friend that since you have started taking the medication that there's been a big change in you for the better. Like.
Oh, 100%. More upbeat and optimistic. Even though I am very self-deprecating and you always give me grief about that. But that's just my little thing. It's not really self-deprecating.
Yeah, but over time, you'll get rid of that. It's a process. It's not an event.
Willa and his Mrs. Linda are working on me at the moment. Damon, like their little project. They're trying to give me positivity because I will always, like, so Willa, you know Willa, he's like Taylor Swift at the moment, selling out venues all over the shop.
I know.
Like, yeah, Gaiety, yeah. Olympia, Liberty Hall. And he did 2 Liberty Halls, and then he did the Gaiety, and I was very fortunate to open from that night. Magical night. And he's got the Olympia in October, it's sold out already. And I have a Liberty Hall show in September. And I'm saying to the two of them, yeah, it's great. Well, I'm fucking delighted for you. I've about 30 tickets off my show. Do you know what I mean? And they're like, well, it's going to sell out. It's going to sell out. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, no,
it is.
Just,
it is. I know it's going to sell out.
But I know he's getting that, and it's all about positive thinking and almost not manifesting, I suppose. Well, manifesting to an extent, I suppose, but being positive and believing in yourself a little bit more. And genuinely, since I took the medication, I am genuinely feeling better, more positive. And I'm training, I'm healthy, my brain is buzzing, and I'm feeling a lot more creative than I have done in a long, long time.
Yeah, and I think if you follow that up with, I've sold 20 tickets, but I'm definitely going to sell her out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You kind of tee off from that, like, you know.
Mm. Sorry, Dermot's here as well. Dermot, sorry. Sorry, you're over there in the car, like, Dermot's going, geez, what time is it? Did they put the parking into the car?
Dermot, I've really enjoyed sitting here listening to you verbalise that, because I think sometimes, particularly, again, us blokes are worried that if we can find it difficult to talk about stuff, and it's not that we're afraid to talk about it, and sometimes we are, but a lot of the time we're willing to talk about it, but we're afraid that we find it difficult to put into words or express the kinds of ways we've been feeling.
Yeah.
And we're afraid of being sounding clumsy or a bit, a bit sort of just awkward. But like,
I found I couldn't explain.
Yeah.
I found it hard to explain what I was feeling. But the more he spoke about it, the more came out.
Yeah.
And the better he felt.
And look, it's lovely that you're saying my meditation's helped.
100%.
And, I would get, such, just a lovely feeling knowing that those meditations helped you. But for me, I would say that, you were helping yourself, that you reached for something like meditation, whether it was mine or somebody else's. You made the choice to go, I'm not feeling very well. I need to reach for something that I suspect can help me. And you didn't. A lot of people will reach for those things that we're all familiar with, like alcohol or nicotine or whatever else it happens to be, or food or sugar or whatever it happens to be. But you reached for something like meditation. You took a chance, and a lot of people might feel a bit awkward about that kind of thing.
Yeah. I actually took on a bit of therapy as well.
Yeah.
But I have to say, while we're here, like I was booked in for 6 sessions. And the first 2 sessions barely revealed anything or said anything. Mm. It was just found it a little bit. But I said, no, this is like what I said. It's like a process. I said, right, I'm not just going to end
don't
it here
because the miracle happens.
I'm not feeling it straight away. So I was patient with it. And then by the end of the 6 sessions, I was like, well, yeah, I'll be definitely doing that again if I ever hit a low point.
Yeah. But you're learning. Like, when do we ever, again, as men, and I'm not trying to say that women don't go through any of this, and please, if there's women listening, I'm not making light of issues that you may have. It's just generally speaking, and it is very general, men find it more difficult to talk about things, and I think that's a well-known thing. And think about it, you're going into therapy and you're expected to sit in a room with a stranger and completely open up in 60 minutes about everything that you're going through, stuff that you feel hard to verbalize anyway.
Yeah.
And at no point in your life, probably up until then, have you ever done that? Have you ever sat down and fully opened up to a stranger right in front of you?
Unless it was at a rave at 7 in the morning.
That's
the only time. Oh, no, come on.
But this is why we do talk like that when we're drunk and stuff.
Yeah.
Because there are those inhibitions.
The barriers are down, aren't they?
So, of course, it would take you at least 2 weeks to sort of feel comfortable, learn to navigate that space, learn to speak, without all these blocks and filters you run everything through on a daily basis, And I think that's magic. For me, I still go to a psychologist. I've been going for the last, I'd say, 8 years. And I go once every 6 weeks. And when I started, it was because I was in crisis point, because I'd let my meditation go and suddenly all that stress and overwhelm started to come back. So now I go not because I'm in crisis point, because I don't want it to get to that point. But for me, I liken it to just opening up the bonnet of your car and looking at your engine and going, so that bit does that when this happens and that. So I learn so much about the things that trigger me, the things that stress me out, the things where I should be saying no to that I'm saying yes, or the other way around. Because the person sitting across from you will see patterns before you do, just like your mechanic goes, this car is pulling to the left. And you're like, really? And so you just learn these. It's just, again, that's where the awareness comes in. It's just learning about yourself. And it's lovely to do that when you're not on fire.
Yeah.
When you can just go in and go, do you know what? I'm actually feeling okay this week, you know, and you, then it gives you a chance to explore the areas that maybe, don't get the attention they need when you're in full-on crisis point, you know. And I know, like, that's so brilliant that the two, like, lads like you talk about this. I know, like, guys like the two Johnnies talk about it because it needs to be normalized, you know. And we don't have to wait until we're full of liquor before we can actually talk to somebody, you know. Because it's a skill.
Yeah, 100%.
It's a skill you learn how to verbalize what you're feeling and how to communicate that to somebody. And it's not something that lads learn growing up. It just isn't.
And you can be very lucky to friends. I'm very lucky to have Willa as a very close friend. And I remember even there recently when I was going through that, I knew Willa would be there if I needed him straight away. I'd send him a text or I'd just ring him straight away. Or if you missed a call, he'd ring me straight back. Is everything all right? Whatever. And just as much as he jokes and laughs and all that, he's got the heart of a lion. and he looks out for his pals. I appreciate that, Will.
Yeah, I think it's great, though, as well, Dermot, that you're talking about, you know, that you can understand, if you can get to understand your mind and understand your body and understand why you feel like this and what to do when you feel like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're hitting the pressures of life or things are starting to build up a little bit, maybe you have a mantra or you have a meditation that you can sit down, do a couple of breathing exercises, and it just kind of brings you back to that restart button on your phone where you just press it and you just come back to the beginning again and you can carry on again. Do you know what I mean? Some people just don't have that. They just fucking kick the dog, do you know what I mean? Or throw the bike down the garden or... Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and it's great. It's great. Okay, around the clock, Ronnie.
I say he had a bit of anxiety, that one.
fucking. I started that word. Fucking. Oh, you need to meditate, pal.
Yeah, Russell Crowe. No, it is. And I think men, on the whole, are learning this a lot more. I mean, you've got so many men's groups now at the moment. And I think a lot of us spanned from the pandemic. Like what you talked about yourself. A lot of men just hadn't got a purpose. Like, you're just kind of sitting in the house and you're going, you know, and it's all the sea swimming all started, all that stuff. People started talking to each other. People started interacting. And I just
find,
yeah. And it's like... And it's like people...
What? I said I'm having a nervous breakdown.
Rindy, yeah. Get a set of jump leads. No.
That's a new brand new.
Where's this podcast going? Anyway.
No, it is good that people are talking and that people are communicating with each other. And, you know, the image and ego thing with men, it doesn't have to be that anymore. Do you know what I mean? And as you talked about self-care, it's about looking after yourself.
But you can look after yourself and have fun. I mean, the whole point of my live shows...
This is what I wanted to get on to.
Is to show that you can have the crack and learn some things that are good for your nervous system when you're feeling burnt out or you're feeling busy and wrecked, which is the name of my next tour. That
busy and wrecked?
Busy and wrecked, yeah. Nice. Because through, you know, I work with a lot of
corporate
people and any of the shows that I've done and people who send me messages, the common theme is they're busy and wrecked. They're up the walls, flat out, you know, chasing their tail, out the door, you know, and... don't seem to have enough time and we're all wrecked because it's exhausting being in that mode. So it's how do we get out of that cycle of busy and wrecked? But, you know, I like to blend the stand-up and the techniques that I've learned as a meditation teacher. And you can do that. And the whole spiritual wellness world takes itself so seriously. And it's the stuff that puts people off.
Yeah.
You can see it in the shows. People are laughing their heads off. And then the next minute, their eyes are closed and they're trying a technique that's used by Navy SEALs.
That's so what I was going to ask you, Darren. But what is like a typical show like then? Is it like, right, I've got the first 10 minutes I'm doing stand-up, next 5 minutes going to meditate, and then we're going to show a video. What's a live Dermot Whelan mindfulness show like?
What can people expect of
busy and wrecked.
Well, there's stand-up, you know, and I like to share my experiences through comedy and poke fun at the kind of things that we experience and the stuff that people tell us to do. I also like to explain what's happening to people in their bodies and their nervous system. So there's elements of it that are like a funny TED talk, but there's science in there because I always think, you know, people like to know why you ask me to do this thing. You know, what's happening in my brain while I'm doing this? Because that's the way I am.
Yeah.
And then I share some of the techniques. And it isn't an hour long kumbaya session where suddenly I grow dreadlocks and bang a tambourine and say namaste repeatedly on loop. Like I teach a 16 second meditation, that's, if you can start with 16 seconds, if you're that busy, maybe you've got 16 seconds in your day. And that's where we start. But what I love is I see a lad coming in and he's sitting in the audience and maybe his missus dragged him there.
And the body language,
you know, from being on stage, you see those lads, the arms folded high across, as high as possible on their chest. You're not going to get me. You know,
there's a load of bullshit.
I'm only here because she dragged me. Because I was out with the lads, and then usually
kill crows for a living.
But you see them starting to laugh, you know, and then the body language softens a bit, and then the arms get a bit loose, and then the shoulders get a bit loose, and then they're on your side.
Brilliant.
And then you go, "Do you want to try a technique?" And they go, "Yeah, okay." And I think for a lot of us, it's just that the way this stuff has been presented to us, we just haven't been able to relate to the content or the people telling us, you know. And my teacher always says it's the message, the messenger, and timing for a lot of people. So sometimes we might get the right information, but actually we can't relate to the person telling us about it or the timings. Maybe we do like the person giving us the information and we do like what they're telling us. But you know what? My life is at a point right now where I just can't take on that information, you know. But I think the more we can make this stuff accessible for people, have a laugh while we're doing it, because that's what we like.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the timing will become more available to us for this stuff, something to click. And I love when people have just had a good laugh at my show and then they walk out of there and they've got stuff in their mental toolbox. So when they do feel a bit low, or they feel a bit overwhelmed, or they feel like they want to kick the dog or pull the head off a crow, they can actually go, "I know your man Dermot told me, I know this technique is used by Navy SEALs, or it's used by the guards, you know, or it's used by oncology nurses, or it's used by, I teach this stuff to soldiers in the Lebanon. If it's good enough for them, maybe I can do it at that moment when I finish work and I turn, you know, between finishing work and turning the key in the front door, so that a calmer, more available emotionally version of myself walks through it, you know. Do you want to try something now?
I'd love to.
Okay, right. Yeah. Well, we can do it two ways. Right. You can pick something that's kind of annoying you, that's kind of in the background, or maybe Willa, you can try and make him laugh while he's doing it. Because a lot of our inability, right, a lot of our issues come from the fact that we bounce around in our minds from the future to the past, the future to the past. In the present moment, our nervous systems are happier. That's why you hear the term present moment. The less our mind wanders into the future, into the past, the happier we will be. Science tells us that.
So Harvard
study from 10 years ago that showed that, right? So if we can use a simple technique to bring our attention into the now, it allows us to take a break from worrying about those things in the back of our mind. And even if you get a little break, just like rebooting your phone, like restarting your computer, like you were talking about earlier, that can be enough. That ripple effect is big. Yeah. We just need to break that cycle of worry. So, try this. So pick something that's kind of floating in the background.
Annoying me a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe something that's on your mind. Nothing too deep.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a therapist and I'm a comedian. I can't help you. But
my wife. Oh, sorry.
Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi.
I love you, Willow.
Yeah, my Wi-Fi.
Okay, so you got something there?
Yeah.
Right, okay. So that might be something, a way we move through the day, just something kind of niggling at us the whole time and we're ruminating about it. So what I want you to do is put one hand in your belly right now, okay? And I want you to breathe in so that there's a balloon in your belly, imagine it. When you breathe in, that belly expands. The balloon expands, we hold it, and then you let that go. Just make that exhale nice and long. So now we're going to breathe into a count of four, okay? So breathing in, two, three, four, hold, two, three, four, let the breath go. Just let it go. 2, 3, 4, and hold. 2, 3, 4. Now breathing normally. Were you thinking about that thing that was worrying you while you were doing that?
No.
It was gone.
Yeah, completely.
Now I've just said it, it's back in there.
Yeah.
Thanks, yeah. Dermot. But look, that just shows you, right? That is 16 seconds technique. You know, that's how I learned it. It's sometimes called box breathing, square breathing. It is used by soldiers and law enforcement. But what you did there was you just broke that cycle of rumination, of worry. And what happens when we don't break that cycle, our thoughts get more and more involved, more and more entwined, and we start to catastrophize and it seems worse
spiral,
and heavier.
Yeah.
So what you did there was you just broke that. You introduced a pattern interrupt, as it's called. And sometimes that's just enough. Particularly if you're doing an exam or you're worried about someone in your family, maybe you're worried about your own health, just to break, or someone else's health, anything like that, just to break that cycle. You know, and all you need is 16 seconds. We didn't have to trek up to the top of Bray Head there and put on Lululemon stretchy pants, you know, and look out to sea. We just did it where we were. Mm. You know,
talking about climbing Bray Head.
Yeah.
Kilimanjaro. Right, come here. I know we're running out of time here, but come here. What is the 80s tune that you've got you up to Kilimanjaro? 80s music.
Well, do you know what? Kilimanjaro was a perfect example of what we've just done.
Because, so you went with a group.
Yeah. So I took a group of you know, mindfulness beginners, and we used the mountain, I guess, as a perfect analogy for just overcoming issues in our life, or setting ourselves a challenge, or getting out of our comfort zone. And my God, do you do it on that thing? It's just shy of 6,000 meters.
Wow.
You don't need ropes and things, but I guess it's probably the highest you can hike without needing, you know, equipment.
Yeah,
I'll put it that way. So, but everything that's on your mind will be amplified, I discovered, the higher you get. So if you're anxious about, you know, your health or getting old or something at home, it will be amplified as you go higher. And plus, the oxygen deprivation is the hardest thing to deal with.
The egg is thinner, doesn't it?
Your mind does funny things and your body does really funny things. You can get really nauseous, dizzy, confused, all kinds of symptoms.
So the way I do be on a daily basis. right in.
But when I was, the nearer you get to the top, the tougher it is. And your mind goes into these dark places and you start to, for me, I was just really going into those circular thoughts, those, you know, that rumination and thinking I'm too old for this and what am I doing? And this is a terrible idea. And, you know, what if I die up here? I'm going to have a heart attack, you know, and all these kinds of things start amplifying in your mind. So what I needed was something to get me out of that cycle of thinking. So box breathing, what we just did, is one of those things. But I also did an 80s music trivia quiz with the guy in front of me. I don't know how happy he was about it. But actually, it kept our mind out of the future of thinking what could go wrong, out of the past thinking, well, I remember that time I didn't feel too well, maybe. So you're in the present. So if you're, I guess we were in the 80s to some extent in our minds, but you know, so if you're trying to think, oh my God, who sang Footsteps on the Dance Floor?
Tainted Love. And
and you're thinking, even though you're gasping for breath and you're trying to regulate your breathing and you're stepping on ice and you're going really, really slowly, I found that was enough to keep me distracted so that it just broke the cycle of worry, you know? And I think a lot of the time, that's all we need. We just need those little things that break that cycle of worry, whether it's meditation, whether it's 80s music trivia quizzes at 6,000 meters, or whether, like I said, it's a laugh with your best friend, you know, or it's going to the gym or whatever, you know. And that ripple effect, as you mentioned, that's huge, you know, because you're moving into the next part of the day or the next moment from a calmer, more centered, happier nervous system, and that's when you're more effective and you're not at the end of your tether, you know?
And that's the science behind it, isn't it?
And that's recovery, that's resilience, that's where resilience happens, you know, as opposed to the endurance just piling one thing on top of the other.
If people want to find out about your live shows, Dermot, where do they go?
They go to dermotwhelan.com is probably the easiest place to go.
And all your dates are there and tickets and all
big
that.
National tour. Big one in the Bord Gáis.
In the Bord
Gáis?
Very nice.
So, yeah, they're on sale. It's all kicking off from January.
Amazing.
Yeah, great.
2024.
Great Christmas present, guys.
Yeah, 2025.
I can't wait. So I'm writing a book at the moment, which is going to go hand in hand with that tour. So
amazing.
I just want to help people get out of that frazzled mode, you know, that mode that had me in the back of an ambulance breathing into a brown paper bag, which said Centra on it. It was an official HSE brown paper bag. I just want people to be able to just not feel so busy and wrecked all the time.
You know? There are ways.
And is there stuff that people can get on for your meditations and for your...
It's on the website, is it?
Is the links?
Everything's there, DermotWhelan.com, and of course the Mindful podcast, which season one has just finished, but there's tons of good stuff there. Season two on the way.
Brilliant.
Some great guests.
There's a weekly guided meditation on that. So if you're curious about it, it's a good way of just dipping your toe into meditation.
It's level meditation.
Without having to go to some weird parish hall with the...
Yes. Dermot. The other Dermot.
Before we let you go, Dermot, obviously you touched on it, your podcast, and obviously one of your close friends won an Oscar. What's his name again? Cillian Murphy.
Yeah.
Cillian Murphy.
I had lunch room one year down in Kilkenny, me, him and Des.
Did you?
Yeah, and he was there with his missus. Do you remember that? Damn at the Zoid of Zuni there.
Oh,
he had a bit of lunch and that. There was me, you, Killian's missus, and Des Bishop, we were there.
Well,
such a really nice fella.
Well, the only time I've ever met Killian was in your company, obviously, in the Ivy Gardens. Got to shake his hand and just kind of going, wow. This is amazing.
Of moments of laughter. Do you remember the time you were in the Ivy Gardens with Linda? Me, you and Linda were standing there and your woman walked straight into the door. Do you remember that she left the mark of her lipstick?
Oh, yeah. Our lips were
and
on the door.
And you and Linda just looked at each other and just broke her heads. And she just... kind of looked around and just pulled the door open and walked straight through.
I thought you were going to say, do you remember the time we met Cillian Murphy? Your man walked over and pulled his head off.
No, come here. What a great national treasure as well.
An absolute national treasure. But what is it like for you, Dermot, being his friend? You've known him since your college days.
Yeah, just in case anyone thinks that we're massively just clunk name dropping. I used to work in film in the 90s, long before I was in radio or comedy or anything like that. I used to essentially make cups of tea for actors, and he was one of them. And we just got on really well because he was just starting out as an actor. He was getting tiny parts, and I was I had tiny parts. But you know, we were kind of on the little same trajectory, but we were laughing actually because the week he won the Oscar, I won Limerick Person of the Month.
Get in.
Legend.
So I was sending him a picture of my, not the year, the month of my trophy gun. Yeah. See, anything you can do.
But you might be in the runner for the year then, will you? Because you must have all the monthly winners at the end. Go Limerick Person of the Year from the 12 monthly winners.
Yeah, they do do that, but I didn't win.
We both.
Right.
Oh, did you not?
No.
Right, okay, moving on.
I didn't turn up at the dinner, which I think.
Ah, you see that. Yeah, exactly.
I think Keith Earls might have. I think
you
see,
if Killian hadn't torn up the Oscars, you wouldn't have won it. Is he there? No, you won it.
Killian's one of the. He was my first guest on the series. And it's a really cool conversation because he doesn't do those kinds of chats.
No, he doesn't.
About what goes through his head when he's performing. Mm. So, and I'm very grateful to him for doing that.
Listened to it. It was really, really
great
good.
Great insight.
And just to say to anyone else listening to this, have a listen to Dermot's podcast because it's really good and really interesting. Well, I enjoyed it the way you kind of went back and forward with him to a conversation that he's had before, and then you just went, you know, somewhere else. It was like you'd done something a few years beforehand, didn't you?
Yeah, I was saying it was like Inception, which ironically was one of his films, in that it's an interview within an interview.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was an interesting way to do it. The whole thing is, it ties into what we were talking about in terms of, you know, the episode's based on flow state, you know, those things that we do where we lose track of time and we stop judging ourselves and we're just fully in the moment, in that present moment. Again, that's another way of getting ourselves out of that cycle of worry and overthinking. So it's, I guess, we talk about how he gets into that flow state because that's where the magic happens, you know, particularly for performers. You guys know it. You've been on stage. You know those nights when the jokes just flow and you could stay up there forever, you know?
Yeah.
It's been an absolute education and a pleasure.
It's great because he's one of our mates. It's just a chat and really, it was really, really great to have you in, and we love you.
You've always been good to us over the years, Dermot, and it's only right that we direct people towards your website and to your podcast
and to your gigs.
Brilliant, and to your live shows. I'm definitely going to go to that. Oh gosh, that sounds like a lot of fun. Like to go, Get some mindfulness techniques and a bit of comedy.
He'll probably need two fellas on the night to get rid of the books.
The books?
Yeah, his book. Probably on sale.
Oh, sell them. Right.
Yeah, we'll sit there selling the books.
Run the merch stand.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
That's what my children are for. They're even cheaper than you guys.
You're doing Rosie out of a job.
That's what I used to say at the last tour was my you know, the lads were out manning the book stands and I was like, they're my sons, Owen and Matthew, they're out there. Please buy a book. They're in transition year. They've only had one ski trip this year. Please.
And they need spending money for the Seychelles.
Say what you can. But yeah, they're a great cheap labour, free. So thanks to the boys. One of them's started the Leaving Cert. So.
Oh, good luck to them. Today's the first day, wasn't it? I know, podcast world.
Last week.
Darren Whelan's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Loved it. And keep up the amazing work. Love it.
Thank you. Brilliant.